This podcast is from the IDPF Digital Book 2012 Conference at Book Expo America.
I'm Garth Conboy. I'm the chairman of the board of the IDPF, but I am luckily here today in my more engineering capacity, and so this will be the last of the emceeing before I introduce the panelists here talking about the future of EPUB, Marcus Gilling, who is the CTO of the IDPF, and Brady Koopa. Right pronunciation? Koopa, sorry. From Barnes & Noble and myself. And so without further ado, we'll let Marcus fly, largely.
Okay, so as most of you probably know, the mission of the IDPF is to foster and enable a global, open, non-proprietary ecosystem for e-publishing. In doing so, of course, the EPUB standard itself is our primary tool, the primary deliverable of the IDPF. And I think before the three of us start telling you about stuff, the important thing to point out in terms of the future of open e-publishing is that what it actually holds is not up to me, and it's not up to Garth. It's up to the ecosystem. Remember that IDPF is a forum that exists in order for you as a stakeholder to make your voice heard and to essentially push your agenda. So what IDPF invests in terms of new developments standard-wise, is not cast in stone. There's a dynamic here, and you as an IDPF member is a very vital part of that dynamic. So if you see IDPF changing track in the future, maybe abandoning some projects and starting others, that's not a bug. That's a feature. That's something we do in order to be able to adapt quickly to changes in the ecosystem, new opportunities and new challenges. So what we will do here, we'll be quick. We plan to talk for about half an hour. Then we'll have plenty of time for questions and answers. We're going to tell you about a few things that are ongoing right now, currently running projects, and then about stuff that's further down the pipeline. Okay, so based on the roundtable discussions yesterday, the first thing I want to point out, in case you have been feeling nervous or having a hard time sleeping at night, there is no plan for an EPUB 4 at this time. The only thing we will be doing with the main specification is what we call maintenance work, right? So there are bugs in the spec, typos. There are changes in other specifications that we need to adapt to. That's called minor releases, right? So our plan is in the autumn to start the work on an EPUB 3.01. When that's done, it will be totally non-disruptive, if you see what I mean. It's not going to break any reading system implementations of EPUB 3. It's just cleanup work. What IDPF is doing, and the image I'm showing here, was done with the purpose of winning the record of the most ugly graphic of this whole conference, is to work on a modular manner in terms of new features in EPUB, right? So we're not updating the main spec that often. Instead, we're working with modules that enhance and add new features to the existing EPUB 3 base. Okay, so first a bit about current projects. There's four things here that we'll talk briefly about. And Garth, you're covering the first two ones.
Well, alrighty then. These are two modules that there is current. Well, this is actually completed work. The next one, there's current work going on. EPUB fixed layout, that is actually pretty nice example of it there in the image, in that there's that, you know, I don't know exactly how that one's done, but one way to do it would be a background image with positioning text on top of it. Perhaps the text is just laid out in normal HTML and positioned in that area, or perhaps it's an SVG, or if it's closer to the immoral side, the whole damn thing is an image and those letters aren't really letters, they're pixels. But let's hope that's not the way that was. Fixed layout was this work was completed in March and is published at the URL that was on the previous slide, idpf.org/epub/fxl. And it is basically not all that exciting from a specification standpoint. The number of words in the specification are very small. It's taking advantage of sort of capabilities that was already in EPUB of you can, you know, with CSS, you can move things around and you can have, you know, Z orders and so forth and place things on top of each other. But it was a specification is a specification for metadata describing fixed layout. And it was based on two pieces of work done in the industry prior to the standardization, which was Apple Fixed Layout, which had gotten a fair amount of traction of publishers actually producing to it for iBooks, and also work that Sony had done with metadata description of of the spreads and the positioning and landscape and portrait and so forth. So basically, we took those, put them together, and we seem to have pretty good traction. There's not a lot of shipping at the moment comporting with this version of the spec, but there's good indication that's going to happen soon. Let's see. Should I read these? All right, I won't read the bullets. It's basically metadata, it's additional properties in the OPF file for specifying the layout, whether it's reflowable, or which is the standard in EPUB, or fixed layout, the orientation, whether portrait or landscape, whether you turn it, the content rotates or not, and then how spreads are handled, basically how synthetic spreads are handled. If you have two pages where each spine item is a page, whether when you go into landscape, you might want to slam two together and have a, that works comic books and cookbooks and things where an image flows across two pages. It's very applicable. And then there is a new addition. We had always had control for page spread left, page spread right, and now there's a rendition page spread center, which is, okay, this one doesn't want to be a synthetic spread. It just wants to be centered in the thing. The last thing I'll say about fixed layout is it can be a disaster for accessibility, in that if you looked at that previous thing, if it was an image, just one page per image, that's horrible. The screen reader can't get to it. But there's good ways to do accessibility and fixed layout. If you do your text in SVG, do you do your text in absolutely positioned HTML? Things can be reasonably good. So that's fixed layout. I encourage you to read the spec. This is what, very quickly here, this is what Apple fixed layout, the metadata, looks like. And I am spacing on the moment something .apple.com that goes in the meta-imp file, the meta-imp folder, and would describe a publication as fixed layout. This doesn't break the spec. You can still put this in if you want to target iBooks. And I believe Apple has announced that they're supporting the standard version too. But you should be able to do both at the same time for that intervening period. Next slide. And this is the simplest form that custom file that was in metainf moves into markup in the OPF. And this one we're saying it's prepaginated, which makes it fixed layout. And we go ahead and make synthetic the spread rendition. We want to do that when we're in landscape mode. And then each of the XML files, you basically specify the pixel size or aspect ratio that you're targeting with each of the pages, and it should be letterboxed to be. You don't want the reading system stretching these things because they're supposed to be sort of print images of some high resolution or high fidelity. Next. And this, I'm not going to talk about the first one, but the bottom one there is something new in our fixed layout specification, is you can have a normally reflowable piece of content. Your normal, most of your book is reflowable, and you'll be able to change zoom size and do all the cool reflowable stuff, but you can intermix in there fixed layout spine items. So like this one has a fixed layout title page in an otherwise reflowable publication, which I think is pretty cool. Next. And advanced adaptive layout is work that is ongoing. Basically, an ability to get near print fidelity, but not have horrible things happen when you change orientation or change aspect ratio of device. I mean, that's clearly the real world problem. You want to do something pretty, and it wants to work on an Android phone and an iPad and a browser view. And to use the same layout, it's very difficult to have it pretty in all these environments. So adaptive layout is based on work being done in the some being done in the CSS working group, CSS regions and CSS exclusions, and also CSS page media module. And but we're basically bringing that forward quickly, more quickly than the CSS working group is, with experimental prefixes on the CSS, and then defining page templates on top of it. So you can have a page template that would be defined for an aspect ratio or a minimum size of a screen, and then you'd flow your content into that template with a concept of regions of, well, here's a region that may flow to into part of it on this page, and then over, when it overflows, it flows to the next page, and you can get, the idea is to get near print fidelity capability with this. And Adobe InDesign 6, they have something called Liquid Layout. We've been working with them. This is the standard side of their Liquid Layout. This is early stuff, but we think it's setting a pretty good direction for moving forward with higher fidelity adaptive content. Oh, okay, two pictures. Okay, this is a portrait view of a piece of content, and if you go to the next slide, it has adapted, relayed out for a landscape orientation, and the little bumpy things at the top are CSS exclusions, which sort of lets you, with great power comes great responsibility. You shouldn't do that. That's completely silly. But the specification certainly supports it.
Great. Okay, so from layout and styling into me mentioning two ongoing projects that are more about semantics and structure. The first one is the currently ongoing project to define how to represent dictionaries and glossaries in EPUB. This is a thing that, in my personal opinion, has been missing for about half a decade in EPUB now, and it's about time that we get our act together and get this done. So basically, a formalization that allows an EPUB to declare itself and act as a dictionary, meaning that the user can read it as any other book in the bookshelf, but also use it as a service while reading other books. So you all know that you can, in most reading systems at least, highlight a word and have it looked up. What this enables is for publishers to actually provide the dictionary service data via EPUB to the user, so the user can select exactly which dictionaries to use.
Does that include a hyphenation dictionary?
Does that include a hyphenation dictionary? Jeff?
No.
That's the question. We'll discuss that.
Right. So, yeah, we're looking at Tessori, bilingual, normal dictionaries, what have you. Hyphenation dictionary, I don't think we listed as a use case, but feel free to scream about it if you're up for it. So this is ongoing. We'll be publishing drafts late summer, August timeframe. For those of you who are into this stuff, help us out. Join the working group. Next is indexes. For those of you who attended Joshua's presentation in this room earlier, he talked about the current situation regarding indexes in ebooks, which can be described, shall we say, as poor. The indexes working group is tasked with taking indexes into the modern world and realizing a new way of using index information intelligently to help the user in what essentially is advanced navigation aids, right? An index is not just a dumb collection of links at the back of a book, or at least it doesn't have to be in the modern world. It can be a navigation aid that can dynamically help the user. For example, while traversing through the text normally, it can give you hints about other areas of the book where the same topic is discussed, for example. And so by that, leading you through a path of the book that you wouldn't otherwise find. So this is very exciting and a very excited working group. I think they have the world record in the number of emails sent to the list already. So that's great. Same point here. If you're interested, join the working group. Right. So those were the four things that we are working on at this time. We're now going to talk more about stuff that's in the pipeline. These things are not started. They are being discussed in various stages of maturity. And we'll just now try to, you know, give you a reasonable update on what this stuff is about. First one, I'm very happy that I'm not speaking on this. So, Garth, go okay. ahead.
All right. There's no controversy about DRM. We're living in a world now where there are content islands, and there's an Apple island, and there's an Amazon island, and there's somewhat of an RMSDK island, Adobe Content Protection island, though that island is sort of a, what's a group of islands? Archipelago? I don't know. But the there's a number of clients that use the same cryptography, but they're still basically islands. And whether or not you can have all sorts of religious views of this, that the obvious solution to that is, well, clearly stop doing the silly DRM stuff on one side, and then on the other side, maybe let's define a very secure be-all, end-all DRM strategy and get everybody to adopt it. And there's a certain amount of fantasy perhaps on both sides, certainly on the right side of that continuum. This is an effort that may well go exactly nowhere. The URL isn't here, but maybe by the time we publish the slides, we'll have the URL to the, there's a request for comment available now, a request for proposal for a lightweight content protection system, and the IDPF is going to listen to comments and, as I said, may well do nothing, may well start an effort inside the organization to define something in this space. Certainly any effort here doesn't preclude DRM-free being the ultimately correct answer, if that's where the industry goes. I think the thing, too, that I'll just talk on for a moment is that the concept of lightweight. If anything were to happen in this area, the lightweight is defined in terms of implementation, user experience, and intrusion in this request for comment document. And from the implementation standpoint, that's sort of more from an engineering standpoint. It wants to not take a whole mess of CPU and memory to implement it. It wants to not require secure hardware. It doesn't want to have complex client-server interactions such that, you know, this should be easy to work with. The user experience, it wants to not intrude upon user interaction with content. It wants to be able to work offline. And from the intrusion perspective, lacking excess restrictions on user behavior, not invade the user's privacy, the reader's privacy, and not impinge the security or integrity of the clients that are consuming any such content. Again, this is at a very early stage. I think probably 6 months from now, we'll know whether there's any direction. And for anything like this to be successful, not only does a bunch of time have to go into defining it, there has to be buy-in from the reading system community, buy-in from the publishing community. So there's a lot of risk here. And whether anything real is going to come out of this, we'll see. I think we'll probably have a good indication of a result or lack of result by this time next year.
Okay, linking and annotation. Another thing that's lurking. We had the ambition originally to add support for interoperable annotations to the EPUB 3 spec. We decided to defer it and start it over again at a later date. That later date is basically now, but it is not a dedicated IDPF project. The good news is that there are other groups out there who have been working on the problem of annotating dynamic content. For example, the Open Annotation Collaboration at openannotation.org, which have now also formed a W3C community group to take their work further. So basically, at this point, IDPF, a number of members from the IDPF are members of a NISO working group that at this point is the incubator for the work of creating an interoperable standard for annotations so that users can move their annotations across devices, so that users can rely on the longevity of their annotations, and so on. This also ties into the problem about inter-publication linking. How do you create a link from one EPUB to another, or from one annotation to an EPUB, or the other way around? This is a related problem, and if I start talking about it, I won't stop. So let's just note that these two things kind of come together.
So I'm going to speak about hybrid layouts. So sometimes you have different layouts that are so different you can't keep it all in the same package. And fundamentally, a rendition is just one view of your content. And in EPUB 3 right now, you can have multiple package documents. So the default is the first one shown in the container XML as the root, but you can have more than one of them. And a good example of multiple renditions might be a magazine. So the default rendition is this beautiful, rich image version of a magazine, but then an alternate rendition of that would be a text-based one. And there's different properties that are good for each of these. And the text-based one is reflowable. You can repaginate it. It's more accessible as well because you're dealing with the text directly. So a way to express this that we're thinking of doing is having multiple root files as package documents. So how do you choose which is the right rendition or view of that content? And it comes down to a number of different criteria. For example, what about the reader? What is the reader capable of displaying? So on the Nook, for example, we can handle images as spine items. You're navigating the magazine directly as images. But let's say you want to switch to a text-based version of this. It all comes down to what attributes do the reader accommodate. So Adobe Digital Editions would prefer to use it as a text-based content. You can also introspect the content based on the resolution and the dimensions of the content to show the default rendition, which is most appropriate for how you're viewing it. So if you had XHTML and you have a fixed viewport, you can introspect what the dimensions are for that viewport based on what the screen dimensions of the reader are, so that you can choose the best and the biggest content to fit in the appropriate reader that you're running. Same thing for images. You can just use the intrinsic dimensions of the images to select it for the appropriate reader. Now that we've got different kinds of renditions, there might be some interesting relationships that you can link between multiple renditions. And again, with the example of magazines, maybe when you're reading the image-based version of it, you want to go to that article view. And so you want to establish some kind of mapping. So what we're working on is suggesting a rendition map XML file that's also contained within the meta inf folder. And that rendition map would take a source and a destination target where those are package documents. Those are OPF files specifying the source and target. And there's many ways you could do the mapping. It could be on a page-by-page basis. It could be on a region basis. You could use CFI tags to mark specific areas within a text-based content. But the end result would be that a reader could seamlessly flow from one view of content to another. Like you could tap on an article in the image, and then it would bring up a text-based version of that. So it'd be switching between renditions. There's some other interesting things we could do with this rendition map. A map doesn't have to be from one rendition to another. It could also be to itself. So I'm working on comics and manga right now for Barnes & Noble. And a feature that's really common in manga and comics is being able to zoom around based on what's interesting in the content at that time. And there isn't a standardized way of doing that. So we're actually thinking of leveraging rendition mapping to handle standardizing how to do this zooming panel view functionality. Lastly, another type of rendition map might be from a region on one of these OPF files to web content, to all kinds of content. So the source is one rendition, but the destination could be anything that you could define as a link.
Right. And we should mention on this topic that there will be a workshop held adjacent to the Tokyo Book Fair. An announcement will be sent out to the IDPF membership lists within the coming few days. Should I run on? Ready?
Please.
Okay.
So the next thing I want to chat about are what's happening with EPUB 3. Now that we have scripting, now that we're taking all these great technologies that we've had in the web, we're sticking them inside of a book. And so essentially, EPUBs are no longer just books, but they're software. And so there's a number of technical challenges that come along with this change of viewing what books are becoming. So it's great we've got all these technologies, but you're going to take this pool of developers who have these great skill set for the web and in a browser, and is everything going to work? And the specification as it stands right now is pretty small in terms of what ebooks can handle. And also, when you're dealing with different types of readers, what are these systems capable of doing? Because this isn't going to be a desktop environment. Books basically are not web pages. So first off, what's the processing model? So we know that ebooks, loosely, are a collection of interrelated web pages as spine items. But when a browser opens up one of these web pages, what happens? It's going to show everything. Everything is visible. It doesn't care about what you're going to see. You can scroll through it. Everything is shown. But on a book, things are different. If you take a spine item that's a web page and load it in a reader, what's going to happen is pagination, because we only have this limited view of that specific content. It might just be a chapter. So we're breaking it down into pages. It's no longer a web page per se. So browsers have a lot of functionality, and we're kind of thinking, oh, okay, is the book going to have this same type of event model where when the document is loaded, we get some kind of JavaScript a notification, or let's say you're assigning an on-click handler to these tags. But books need more than that, because the structure and how we're viewing this content is different. So we start thinking about, are there some EPUB-specific JavaScript APIs that are more meaningful and a little bit more refined for the book side? One of them is, when is the page loaded? So it's no longer just the file, because like I said, the spine item is not the complete page. So we want to know, when is that page loaded? Also, when is some element visible? Because we don't know exactly what is on the page and how it was paginated, we probably want to know at an element level, is something visible or not on the current view that we have. And then there's some other interesting things that you can do with books. If you want to track progress, if you want to trigger events, what happens when a chapter has started, when a chapter has ended? There's a lot of other triggers that are specific to books that we might want to call out. Lastly, because there is this more strict pagination going on in terms of the page, it'd be nice to know, if I change any of that content, if I change any of the structure of the document, do I need to signal to the reader in some way that a repagination is required? So let's talk a little bit about how we manipulate the DOM, how we move through the DOM in a browser today. So fundamentally, we have window and document objects, and those are nice. There's properties we can introspect. But what does a document object mean in the context of a book? Is the document the page? Is the document the spine item? It's not clearly defined. And so even though websites are a collection of pages, and each page has a DOM that we're moving through, we probably need to move beyond that page-centric view. So in a website, these pages are associated by links. And when we're moving through these pages, they're kind of independent islands of information. So we can link to them with hyperlinks, but as you move from these independent pages between them, you're losing the sense of context. You're not able to move up the entire DOM of the website. So something that we want to bring back for books is a sense of context as you move between pages, as you move between chapters. So maybe we need some more book-centric thinking of a DOM. And what we'd like to get out of that is a sense of context between the pages, chapters, and book. For example, if you wanted to write some kind of relationship between a character in one chapter to another chapter, it'd be nice to keep track of that and give access to script writers to be able to do more interesting things, especially when the page that you're currently looking on is going to change as you flow through the content of the book. So we're really thinking about having an ability to walk the structure of the book, which doesn't exist in the current browser DOM model. So why not add a notion of a book object, a chapter, and a page object? So we said this before, with great power...
I didn't know I was...
But I was going to say, with great power comes great cliches, actually. So... If you're taking the tools that you've learned from web development and trying to apply them wholesale to what you're doing in an EPUB, you're probably going to have bad assumptions, and you're probably not going to be happy with the results that you have. So when you're manipulating the DOM, there is some description in the spec right now about unintended consequences and being prevented from manipulating the DOM. So it seems like it'd be nice to know specifically what parts of the DOM are available to notify. And then if you do manipulate these parts of the DOM, maybe you just need to trigger repagination from the reader. Also, what if you're doing some kind of safe change? If it's just a pop-up window, that's not going to manipulate the DOM. Also, changing the content might trigger a change, but you probably want to do that when you're making your kind of like a game or some kind of interaction. You want to be able to change that. So just understanding clearly what happens and what are the implications and where you can change the DOM. So today there aren't many implementations of an EPUB 3 reader. We've got Readium, which is great, and it's safe to assume that a lot of these implementations of reading systems for EPUB 3 are based on a scripting language themselves, and underneath is some type of browser that's putting together the content. And so one of the issues that we have to be aware of is namespace collision. Is there a risk that the names and the objects that are being created in script are going to collide with the actual reading system? So it'd be nice to call those things out and have them separate so you can do no wrong. Also, there's security risks. We don't want script writers to be able to introspect private data. What is my book list? Everyone sees that I have 50 Shades of Grey. I don't want people to know that. So being careful about the namespaces would be helpful. And then obviously there's performance and memory use considerations. As a script writer, you may have grown heavy in terms of your need to use set interval. And, I'm going to have this set interval fire off every 10 milliseconds. But is that actually what's going to happen when you've programmed something in an ebook? Probably not. It may be throttled in some way. And lastly, what is the interaction between writing a script and the actual reading system? Can you control the page turns? Do you want to start doing book navigation UI within the book? Probably not. So I think it just needs to be a little clearer in terms of what you can do and how you can control the book, because we probably don't want to have the entire book as one spine item and then everything handled dynamically through scripting. So just to summarize, we're thinking that there could be a little more standardization in the EPUB spec to help script writers make books more as software and to do it effectively. And the first part is just managing script writers' expectations. So copy and paste programming is going to happen, but at least hopefully this copying and pasting will be from good code that is following these guidelines. So through standardizing this stuff, we want to improve consistency, prevent bugs, because bugs are always going to happen. And this is a big difference when you're writing software as opposed to content. And then we don't want to have that namespace collision and hopefully avoid fragmentation by everyone doing the same thing. Thanks.
Okay, so just a few short words about non-standards, but apps and tools. Readium, Brady mentioned it. It's hosted by IDPF as an open source project. It's a reference implementation of an EPUB 3 reader. And at this point in time, its status is basically that it's rapidly approaching feature completeness. It's gone beyond our expectations in terms of speed and quality and interest from the community. The initial intent of Readium was to be a reference implementation and a tool that producers can use to Q&A content and so on. But it turns out that there's a lot of interest also to use it in an end-user context. So as we speak, there are multiple commercial companies out there now working on products which uses Readium at their core. Readium.org is the address. We also have samples project ongoing. The intent there is to showcase all the EPUB 3 features, at least one showcase per feature. This repository is growing constantly, and I have had many wonderful donations only today and yesterday from people out there who have been doing really cool and new fantastic stuff on top of EPUB 3. So this is a good place for you to go to when you want to, you know, get ideas of what you can do with EPUB 3 or figure out different or the best way to do a particular thing and so on. And also to test your reading system for compatibility. Validation, EPUB check, the tool that everybody loves to hate. The bad news is that it's not going away. The bad news is that you have to continue to validate your content, otherwise you're a bad citizen. The good news is that we're working on a new revamped version of EPUB check that's going to have a lot of the things that we've been missing, such as, primarily better error messages and more pedagogics. The timeline for the new version, the revamped version, is not set, but we're hoping to get something out during this year. In the meanwhile, you can use the current version. Liz Castro said it was B3. It is not. The latest version is a couple of weeks old, I think, Garth, and yep. It's B5. And it works for both EPUB 2 and EPUB 3 content. So keep using it, please. Finally, I wanted to mention the EPUB Standard Widget Toolkit. This relates to scripting and interactivity. We do acknowledge the fact that for many publishers, going into this domain is challenging because you have to write scripts, you have to assure they're stable, that there are no bugs, and you have to worry about accessibility issues and cross-device problems and so on. This is something we want to do away with. So the idea is to start a project that will basically provide code libraries, JavaScript code libraries, that you can reuse to help you do, you know, common kinds of widgets and other interactive tasks, such as, slideshows, timelines, and quizzes, and all the standard common things that you want to include in books. So this project is going to kick off, it looks like, right now. There's a lot of interest in this idea. Of course, it's a win-win situation. As a publisher, you cut your costs, you cut your risks, and everybody helps out to build this library of stable widget code together. So it's a win-win. So stay tuned for that. Finally, if you're taking notes, there's just one URL that's important, really. We have idpf.org/ongoing, which today and in the future will always list the current projects and take you to the project sites and so on. So do remember, idpf.org/ongoing. And with that, we're actually done.
Take 5 minutes for questions.
We have approximately 5 minutes for questions, apparently.
Hello, I'm Luc Audrin from Hachette Livre Paris. A question about future projects, future group. I would like to know if you have something about certification, because we know that EPUB 3 has to be adopted by many people and many software supplier, reading system, and we will hear reading system say, okay, we are EPUB 3 compliant now. But is there a way that we could be sure that all the parts of the spec is respected and implemented? That could be a job for IDPF to have some kind of EPUB 3 certification. What do you think of that?
Right. So at this point in time, there's no formal certification project, no. What is ongoing is that IDPF and BISG, the Book Industry Study Group, is publishing the EPUB 3 grid, which is a publicly available table of which features are supported in which reading systems. So that's one step in the direction you're talking about, to publicize and make available this information for publishers, and hopefully also use that as a tool to push reading system vendors to get, you know, more compliant, because nobody wants to have only red marks in that table, because it's public and it's bad marketing. But I'm with you, Luke, that there's certainly more we can and should do. And any suggestions on how to move forward are welcome. Matthew.
Hi, guys. I have a lot of questions, but I guess I can only ask one right now. I'm wondering, are we ready to do scripting with the state of the spec as it is? Like, you talked a lot about there's a lot of problems. And I wonder, like, most of these problems don't have official solutions. Like you said, requesting that I need pagination. Like, that needs to be done. But is there an official way to do it yet?
Well, I'll make a quick comment. I mean, I think the whole pagination thing is an amazingly interesting topic, in that, you know, if you're saying using WebKit to underneath an EPUB reading system, you know, script is running, you know, there's no signals from WebKit that the content stopped squirming, and that, you know, that sort of drives this whole discussion. And I think we did a reasonable job in the specification of defining two flavors of scripting, whether it's in a rectangle in that it's a scripted module that's sort of inserted as an object and it has a height and a width, and that's whatever happens in that rectangle that's probably reasonably safe, and ask reading system catch up with that. That can be reasonably expected to be cross-platform, and you don't have to repaginate because the outer pagination was able to place that object. When we get to spine-level scripting, I think in the spec we said something in SpecEase that translated to, like, all bets are off, in that being able to get spine-level scripting to be truly cross-platform is really hard. A lot of the things that Brady was talking about would be trying to address that in the future. So my two cents worth is, you know, very few reading systems support scripting at all right now, that when that happens, initially scripting in rectangles, there's all sorts of interesting things you can do in a, you know, not screwing with the pagination type approach. So I think there's a tentative yes on that, and I think it'll be much longer term for scripts to be able to, you know, screw with the DOM out from underneath the reading system. But
yeah, that's perfect. I don't think you should feel you shouldn't do scripting right now, though. I kind of feel, because it's so emerging at this time, that you should still try things out and see how far you can go with it, and hopefully that'll feed into the spec as it evolves and emerges. Yeah.
I'd like to get your comments on how you envision this proposed DRM might be applied to the spec. I'm trying to get a handle on how this would be.
I'm going to waffle on this because I really don't know how or if this is. I mean, right now it is a request for comment, really trying to get insight from industry stakeholders as to whether this is a direction worth going at all. Clearly it's not worth doing if a bunch of work is going to get done and it's not going to get used. So trying to get an indication of that, I think, is very important. I mean, the one area where we have somewhat of a group of islands that all get along together is the reading systems based on RMSDK, the Nook being one of them. It's painful but possible to move an EPUB from a Sony device to a Nook. As we as things come out of the Google Cloud and to move to a Nook, we wrap it in ACS4 as well. And so it would be in these sort of islands that all get along. Is that a direction that makes sense to move to something that's not vendor proprietary? And you know, that would be sort of the obvious area of doing something in that those sets of vendors would likely adopt. I mean, I clearly can't speak for Apple or Amazon as to whether or not they'd go and they'd do anything like that. And so it's, you know, I think that I'm waffling here. I don't know. I think there's some. So basically, we'd have to decide it's worth doing, have to decide the technical direction, and have to get some indication that there would be, you know, a critical mass of buy-in both on the content creator side and the content consumer side. So very early on.
Yeah. But just assuming that there was interest in doing this, I'm trying to understand mechanically how this would work, because doesn't it require something outside of the actual...
Well, it would be, you know, the one proposal that is likely to get made in this area is something analogous to what, it dates way back to like Peanut Press and eBookWise, which is now owned by Barnes & Noble, is their PashHas mechanism, which you basically had some sort of personal information and that was used to encrypt your book. And yeah, you could give it away if you were willing to give away the information. And so it's a much lower bar. The publishers, by and large, have bought into that as sufficiently secure. And so, you know, maybe that's a possible direction. But again, it's a matter of critical mass. And, you know, if we just sort of replace a vendor proprietary thing with a less proprietary thing that doesn't get more islands to come in, is that a substantial enough win to do it? And, you know, again, I don't know. It's... I'm going to keep repeating myself. It's very early on, and we'll have to see where it goes.
I'd like to get Barnes & Noble's opinion on that.
So I sit right next to the guy at our office who is in charge of our DRM. And actually, when you mentioned the hash model, that's currently what we're using, but I really don't have more to say.
Yeah, I mean, Barnes & Noble, they... You know, this is I actually haven't been involved in these conversations, but Bill McCoy, the executive director, certainly been talking to the folks at Barnes & Noble, and we, you know, that wouldn't be, you know, it's a conversation, but certainly no commitments on either side. And you know, before there's a commitment to a technical direction, there has to be a commitment to the concept.
Thank you.
Maybe one more, since there's one more person.
Hi. Edward Mokurai, Cherlin Sugar Labs. I've had occasion to say in several sessions that when computing was new and Captain Grace Murray Hopper was one of the people inventing it, back in the late 50s, early 60s, she said, one of the great things about standards is that there are so many to choose from. So, yeah, it's early and there are an awful lot of things. I mean... I've worked in Unicode, and I've seen an effort that succeeded in bringing a vast multitude of standards together. But that was fonts and character sets is a lot easier than all these different file formats and all the different kinds of interactivity that we haven't even invented yet. So thank you very much for all your efforts. Have any of you thought specifically about what would be required to make this work for textbooks from every grade level, every subject in 100 or more languages?
I think two of the efforts I'll briefly and let you swing at this as well. I think two of the efforts we talked about, the fixed layout and the advanced adaptive layout, one can argue about the ethics of having too much of this fixed layout stuff, but it certainly can do print replica type presentation of very complex content like textbooks. I think that's problematic for consuming on phones because you're inherently panning and zooming. I think the area that I find most interesting in this space, and it's oftentimes thought to apply particularly to magazines, but I think at least as interestingly is textbooks for the adaptive layout, and that's, you know, it's a reasonably complex layout, but there is a flow, and so being able to define pretty and useful layouts, I think, you know, I'm a big fan of where that's going, or hopefully where it's going, and I think textbooks are an application, but God, to quote myself, it's early on there too.
Well, let me just put in two words into that mix. Exploration and discovery, where there is a flow or several flows, but there is also the possibility that the student says, aha, if I take this stuff and that stuff and I start doing these things, and can we support that? That you have, say, an equation which you can graph, and then you can solve, and then you can dissect and put with other equations. There are so many different kinds of math. Can we actually make them work together? I mean, you know, 100, 1,000 questions of this kind.
Yeah. Is somebody from Open University here? Because they've been doing groundbreaking work in terms of equations and so on.
I don't know
on.
If they're in their room. They're certainly here at the,
yeah,
at the conference.
Yeah, I'm looking.
I was just at a conference in Cambridge, England, where they were presenting a substantial amount of material that is being done with, unfortunately, not this level of software, but they're just now getting to the point of talking to the professors about adopting PDFs of the textbook under Creative Commons in many places. Oh. So it's early days yet.
Ready? Yeah, go ahead.
So I actually wanted to respond to what you said as well. It's interesting in terms of the different types of content. The spec addresses things in different way, and you're probably not going to have a spec that's going to address every single need. And so one of the things I've been focusing on lately has been children's content. And where we've started with that was just purely fixed format. But now we're moving more into an interactive type of content, but it's layered on top of fixed. And so when you start describing having these multiple paths of flowing through content, when you look at EPUB today, we have a very structured ordering between the spine items. And if you have a way of introspecting the book as a whole, you can start allowing programmatically to move between them. And I think that holds a lot of promise.
So you could say, take the old choose-your-own-adventure model and now choose your own education.
Yeah, absolutely.
You could say, well, maybe we need a plug-in architecture, and we could use the Wolfram CDF along with a particular programming language or any other math language or tech or whatever.
Sure. So that could just be another media type as well.
Yeah. Database, statistics, Moneyball. I want to see Moneyball in every high school, and baseball in this country, and soccer in some countries, and cricket in other countries, and politics. I want to do fantasy politics in high school.
Thank you.
Okay. So we're done. We thank you for your time.